I'm Karen Given. Earlier this week, USA Gymnastics suspended coach Maggie Haney for 8 years for the verbal and emotional abuse of her athletes, including Olympic gold medalist Lori Hernandez. The crimes of Larry Nassar, who was sentenced to 175 years in prison for sexually abusing gymnasts in his care, made headlines. But verbal and emotional abuse has been alleged in the sport since long before Nassar's crimes came to light. Olivia Christian has one such story.
In 1976, Happy Days was the most popular show on television. Silly love songs by Paul McCartney and Wings topped the Billboard charts. And that summer in Montreal, the world, including a six-year-old Jennifer Say, was introduced to Romanian gymnast Nadia Comăneci, the first ever to score a perfect 10 in the Olympics.
And 10 has gone on the board. That's perfection. And that is Olympic history for Nadia Comăneci.
You know, the fact that she was only 14 and she looked like a little girl, that was really, that had an impact, I think, not just on me, but a lot of little girls across the country.
That's Jennifer. At the time, Jennifer was living in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, taking classes at Wilmore Gymnastics. After seeing Nadia, she begged her parents to let her go as often as possible. Jennifer soon joined their team and competed on weekends.
You know, back then, these were real competitions. Like, it wasn't like that everyone gets a trophy. Like, if you weren't good enough, there was no trophy. So it was pretty cutthroat. And I loved everything about it. I loved how it felt. I loved being scared. I loved learning new things. I loved my teammates. And I just kept wanting to go more and more, and I just kept sort of doing better.
Jennifer went to the gym 3 or 4 times a week for 3 and 4 hour practices. After 2 years, she decided she wanted to compete for a shot at making the U.S. national team.
And I said to my parents, I came home and I was like, I can't do that from this gym. I need to go to another gym. At 9, I was demanding to go to another better gym that had trained elite athletes. And so we made the decision to go to another gym in New Jersey, a little further down the road.
Her stay-at-home mom drove her to and from practices.
And I made my first national team at 10.
This rigorous training was fun for Jennifer. She enjoyed the competition, and she loved her coach.
She was an incredible human being, and I think she's everything a coach should be. You know, she would have considered herself, she's since passed away, an educator first and foremost, someone who sort of used sport to raise confident young girls. And in fact, I remember a moment she asked me one summer, you know, we trained longer in the summer, and she said, is there anything you want to do today? And in her mind, she was thinking of giving me the day off so I could go do something fun with my friends. And I was like, I want to do an extra round of beam training because I'm working on this skill. And she thought that was so funny. But she was always encouraging us to be sort of whole people. But that wasn't what I wanted at the time. I wanted to be in the top 6 in the country. And so at 13, I had a very serious conversation with my parents, and we started to assess the different options.
There was this date looming ahead for Jennifer, her 15th birthday. 15 is the age gymnasts can move up and compete at senior events like the World Championships and the Olympics. She knew she had to find a gym that could get her there. After visiting 3 top gyms across the country, Jennifer decided on Allentown, Pennsylvania. From the moment she walked in, Jennifer noticed things at this gym were different.
We were weighed twice a day. We were berated for what we ate and what we looked like. You know, I remember clearly after a 6-hour practice, my mom brought me a bagel and a coach snatched it from my hands. Like, you're not going to eat that, are you?
At first, Jennifer and her family drove the 2 hours back and forth every day. Then at 14, she moved out of her home to live with a coach in Allentown. There, the insults and shaming continued.
It was sort of control through fear tactics. And I was okay with it. I wasn't happy, and I quickly became probably depressed. But I was holding so fast to this idea that I could achieve this thing, and my whole worldview was kind of wrapped around that. And I thought, this is just the price that you pay.
Jennifer says she and the other gymnasts didn't talk to each other about what they were experiencing.
We sort of watch it on TV at the Olympics and think it's a team sport, but it's not. It's an individual sport, and you're vying for an individual spot, and you're vying for your coach's favor, and you're vying for the judges, you know. And I think we were just all too afraid to show any weakness.
Struggling to maintain her weight, Jennifer's injuries began piling up. Days before team trials for the 1985 World Championships, she broke two fingers and got two black eyes after landing on her head on the balance beam. Jennifer was rushed to the emergency room.
The doctor was told not to give me stitches because that would make me not look right for the meet because there's an aesthetic component.
Despite those injuries, and while wearing layers of tape and makeup, she performed well. She was second in the country, qualifying her for the World Championships. They took place just weeks later in Montreal. There, Jennifer gave what she describes as solid performances in 7 of the 8 events.
And it was my last event of a competition. It was bars. And I had a devastating fall.
Oh, and there's a nasty tumble, and she looks badly hurt.
Trainers rushed to Jennifer's side. They quickly got her onto a stretcher and into an ambulance where her dad rode with her to the hospital.
I just remember being so just desperate, like, this was it. This is over. I'm just starting to get to the level that I thought I could maybe get to, and now my career is done, and I don't know how to do anything else.
Jennifer underwent surgery. When she woke up, she learned that she had broken her right femur, an injury that is not as difficult to come back from as a knee or some other joint injury. Jennifer and her team were relieved by this news. Talk quickly turned to how to get her back in competition shape.
You know, I started with a traditional plaster, then I went to something lighter, and then that doctor I described gave me something with a hinge so that I could kind of move it so there'd be less atrophy. I was in the gym every day. I trained bars, which is crazy, with a spot. I just kept training, and I didn't have the cast long enough. It was well under, I think, the whatever the recommended time frame is, probably 12 to 15 weeks. I think I got it off in maybe 8 or 9 weeks.
For the next 8 months, Jennifer just kept going, limping along, favoring her other leg, training for her next big competition, the U.S. Nationals.
The courage of Jennifer Say led her on to the title as women's all-around champion of the USA. But the pain was a heavy price. All right, have you come down from the victory yet? How are you feeling about that all-around championship?
I definitely haven't come down yet. I'm very excited. It's just, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
You were marvelous, but you did pay a price for it. I understand that your ankles are pretty sore. Can you tell me about that?
Well, my left ankle has been bothering me. Before I came into this competition, it sprained pretty badly, and it hurt a lot yesterday, but it's over.
Jennifer had just won the 1986 national title, but the years of struggles were finally catching up to her. The Olympics were 2 years away.
I was sitting there thinking, you know, with my ankle in a bucket of ice, this is probably as good as it's going to get. And I remember it very distinctly. That was the real first time I ever was like, maybe this is enough.
She remembers asking herself, should I stop right now? But no adult, no coach, no parent posed that question to her.
Well, who stops when they just won a national championship?
Jennifer deferred going to Stanford by a year to train for the 87 USA Championships. Only her drive was no longer there. After the competition, Jennifer knew she was done. But her parents needed convincing.
And I believe, to some extent, that they didn't understand the depths of my depression and didn't understand that it was physically and emotionally impossible for me to continue. I mean, I thought about killing myself. When I drove my car, I thought constantly about driving over the median into oncoming traffic. I didn't share this with them, so I don't think they understood it.
After a series of difficult conversations with her family, Jennifer left gymnastics. When she got to Stanford in 1988, she was exhausted. Surrounded by smart, world-class athletes who were just hitting their prime, Jennifer felt like she was going into retirement, happy to sleep and eat, and to not have to rehab any injuries. After Stanford, Jennifer started working for Levi Strauss. She rose through the company, ultimately becoming the CMO of global brands.
But I suffered, you know. I accepted treatment that I shouldn't have accepted from friends and from romantic partners and from bosses. Like, I felt like that's what I was worthy of. You know, I'd been treated that way for many years in the gym. And so I eventually went into therapy and came to understand a lot of this.
Jennifer decided to write her story.
I sat down to write it not really thinking that I would ever get published, but just to sort of make peace and kind of understand it myself, I guess. And I mean, at this point, I was nearly 40 and still sort of wrestling with it. But then I wrote it in almost like a fever state. I think in 3 months or 2 months, I wrote a draft. And I sent it to a friend who was a novelist. And she said, it's a book. This is a book.
Chalked Up, My Life in Elite Gymnastics was published in 2008. Within months, Jennifer's story and the details of the horror she faced was out there for the world to read. And the response from the gymnastics community was quick.
It was harrowing and absolutely vicious. And preyed on all my sort of biggest fears. And it's the tactic, the strategy of the community, right? Like, there can't be any validity here. You are a loser. You were terrible. You are a failed ex-gymnast who never accomplished anything, and now you're just taking it out on the sport.
Jennifer heard it from gymnasts, coaches, and gym owners.
It was hard. It was really hurtful. And it was, despite being 40, despite being a mom, despite having nothing to do with the community, it is still your community. It's what I grew up in, you know?
Readings in Pennsylvania, where she had spent years training, had to be canceled because of threats. The publisher feared people would be screaming and yelling at her. But
I got hundreds, if not thousands, of letters from people that said, thank you. I felt this way too, and now I feel less ashamed or less alone or less whatever.
And then,
in August of 2016, a team of reporters from the Indianapolis Star published accounts from gymnasts who accused Nassar of sexually abusing them during supposed medical procedures.
A group of senators are calling for a congressional investigation of the U.S. Olympic Committee and USA Gymnastics.
For years, Larry Nassar was responsible for the care of most of the top gymnasts in the United States. In a Michigan courtroom, he pleaded guilty to charges of criminal sexual misconduct.
As athletes and fans ask publicly how the crimes of Larry Nassar could have been allowed to go on for so long, Jennifer became what she calls a voice of history of the sport. She went to D.C. and met with Senator Dianne Feinstein on the Safe Sport Authorization Act. Passed in 2018, this law requires governing bodies and amateur sports organizations to report sexual abuse allegations to local or federal authorities. While Jennifer is encouraged that allegations of sexual abuse are being believed and prosecuted, that they've led to resignations and firings, she still feels there is more work to be done in the sport with regard to what she sees as other types of abuse.
I don't believe really anything, and certainly not enough, I don't believe has changed. I mean, my coaches are still coaching, and they're incredibly abusive, and I don't think they've changed. If you're starving and you're told you're fat, if you're in pain and you're told you're lazy, you don't believe your own perception of the world. Imagine how disorienting that is for a child.
If you had a message that you could give to young women who are considering becoming part of the gymnastics community in USA Gymnastics right now, what would you tell them?
Well, I think I would tell any young girl, trust your own take on things. Don't accept poor treatment. I would tell their parents to pay attention and look out for them. I would say do it as long as it's fun. But if you love it and you're having fun, then do it. If you're not, say something, speak up, stand up for yourself, use your voice.
That story came from reporter Olivia Christian.